Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us today on the next in the series of the Value Positive podcast. Now, today we're actually going to be discussing about relationships, in particular community relationships and the relationships we have in society. And to help us discuss this and come out with some key insights and some thoughts, I'm joined by the very excellent Paul Valentine. Paul is the MD of Sonar Engagement, one of our strategic partners. And I'll leave Paul to do a little bit of an introduction himself. But Paul's been spent nearly 30 years, actually, in the Northamptonshire Police Force, tackling crime and deprivation throughout the area and also through real positive and quite innovative neighbourhood collaborations. And actually coming out of the police force, actually rose to commander prior to him leaving. So that intelligence and that understanding has enabled Paul to really understand what grassroots communities want and need, building skills, knowledge and experience, and has actually built Sonar Engagement to an organisation that specialises in this area. So first of all, Paul, thanks for joining. Are you well?
I'm very well, thanks, Rich, and good to be with you again.
It's an absolute pleasure, mate, absolute pleasure. What, if you were to define what is community needs, what do you do as your day job, for want of a better term, Paul, and why is it so beneficial currently?
Yeah, so understanding community wants and needs. You can start with a high level. There's lots of open source information available. You might want to start looking at your own local authority as a geographical area. Each local authority will report on areas of demographics, areas of deprivation, and indeed will have their own social value plans. So beginning to understand your immediate neighbourhood and the challenges facing your communities is always a good place to start. Once you've mapped the areas of deprivation and the issues facing the local community, it's at that point you begin to engage with wider stakeholders. So I would encourage each organisation to do a very quick stakeholder mapping exercise. There's plenty of templates freely available, but you can begin to see what impact you have in your local community, and that's both a positive impact and also a negative one. I'm asked all the time, Rich, when I go around my work, can you give us some real examples of what you're talking about when it comes to stakeholder engagement and positives and negatives? So yeah. Whatever industry you're in, you're bound to leave a negative environmental impact. And that's even if you're doing good in society. So if you're, I don't know, in building, for example, or putting in new and innovative energy efficient systems or double glazing, solar paneling, and all the rest of it. The net carbon result of what you do is really good, but actually on the way to installing whatever it is you might be installing, there'll be a carbon footprint on the way in the vehicles that you use, how you're sourcing your materials might have a negative impact on ultimately where you source from. So in practical terms, when I guide clients through this process, I'm really looking at what positive impacts they're having, which is the outcome of their work in the industry in terms of carbon reductions, but also what is the negative footprint they have.
It's a very good point. Do you see organisations really taking it more on board now and actually are very open to kind of capturing the mood and the feel and the wants and needs of communities, or is it a bit piecemeal?
The race to net zero is more and more prominent across industry, and if anything, when I go into companies, it's usually an area of strength, and actually they're not winning work anyway unless they're talking about or have a plan around their carbon reductions. So that's actually an area of strength, and I use that as an example of the negative impacts on communities. But other negative impacts in communities that might be, if we go back to the building scenario again, might be, they're building a new hospital. Absolutely fantastic. Everybody can see the positives of that. But the negatives of that might be the short, medium-term community disruption, what vulnerable groups are you affecting in communities that would otherwise be able to get to their medical appointments. So it's a broad-ranging subject on negatives. On the positive side, This is where I see where we're being asked for a lot of our help in how they go about engaging with communities. So you begin by looking at open source information, so areas of demographics, areas of deprivation. What are the local priorities set out by the local council or parish council, whatever it might be? And you can very quickly begin to understand what the local issues are, and then begin to hone in what your social value contribution or planning might look like.
We tend to find there's so much information that I think you've quickly identified, but it's quite generic in some times. And I think that kind of human touch where you physically have the conversations, you can find out almost the pulse of communities. And it's that pulse in the now, which is so important. Obviously, it has to link back to strategic priorities. Of course it does. But one of the things that I always think is so beneficial, and I see you do all the time, Paul, is have those conversations. And that's the richness of social value. So you can create what is needed now, because people change their mind. People develop new understanding, new thoughts, new fears. And actually having that relative live information can be so valuable for people and certainly for organisations.
Yeah, I agree, Rich. You certainly got to be responsive to the local need of the local area and wants and needs of the communities. And yet the deprivation data can be dated. But one way of validating that is having conversations with stakeholders. If I go back to the process internally, one of the questions I'm always asked by commercial is, you know, what's this going to cost? This social value thing, what's it going to cost? And the answer I always give, it's actually going to cost you naught. It stands for KNORT, which is, it's only going to cost you knowledge, opportunity, resource and time. So when you begin to look at what your organization can give, it's always a good starting point to map out what your naught is. Knowledge can be shared with SMEs. It can be shared in schools through STEM visits, and you know, your expertise, knowledge in whatever industry you come from is going to be valuable somewhere within your local community. The opportunities can be opportunities that you can open up as an organization, or give people opportunities to come into your organization, or indeed internally for your staff to develop and grow. Resources can be people, so volunteering time, but it also can be cash and funding in the old-fashioned way of CSR giving, I guess. And then the T at the end of it is time. So most organisations, or a lot now, will offer paid volunteering time a day. So once you've identified what your naught is, I always say to an organisation with social value, it's really important to hone in and make a difference and validate what you're doing. So clearly a building organisation, for example, or an IT organisation will have some specialist skills and knowledge, and they can't put on their magic cape and save the world. But what they can do is use their naught resource to make a difference in communities. So once you've identified what that might be, engaging with your local communities is really important. And never assume. So once you've got an understanding of what your local area wants and needs are, begin to engage with the local council, the community safety partnership, or there'll usually be an organisation just waiting to engage with you. So your local VCSE organisations, that the voluntary and community sector, or faith-based groups, or indeed, when you look further down the supply chain, SMEs that are aspiring to become a tier two or a tier three organisation, all of those groups in some way will have some wants or needs. And just identifying them, open-ended questions, never assume, you can quickly begin to bring out tangible options that are reflective of the community wants and needs now, but also when you come to evaluate what your naught is around your social value approach, you've got those stakeholders that you can go back to and qualify what you've done.
I love naught. I must admit that's a definitely great takeaway for me today. Just actually thinking about it in practice, as a result of those conversations, have you seen some really good examples of how organisations have taken that kind of value intelligence, for want of a better word, and actually created a great social value offering or done something differently as a result of that intelligence?
Yeah, so some really good examples currently working in and around Salford. So an organisation will be encouraged to go into schools and deliver STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering and maths, and or other career opportunities in schools in and around Salford. But following some of our community mapping, looking at the highly deprived areas, we found that two particular schools had previous really poor Ofsted ratings, really deprived areas and challenging backgrounds where there was high absenteeism, high teenage pregnancy rate, high crime rate, antisocial behaviour. The companies that I worked on behalf of really took time to speak to the schools and understand what their wants and needs are. And what came out of it wasn't always just STEM lessons. And in fact, what the companies have agreed to now, which is really encouraging, is to form a relationship with those schools for the next 5 years. So new pupils coming in will grow up knowing what these organisations are about. They'll be regularly in and out of schools offering all types of support, not just materials, but mentoring, opportunities for students to come into their workplace, really investing that time. So it's a really good, fine example of, rather than a scattergun approach of STEM visits, really honing in where there's most need. But then, conversely, likely to achieve a really high return in social value.
I must admit, we've seen that quite often in a number of organisations across different sectors now, where the intelligence they've used to really be more, I suppose, definitely more pragmatic, but certainly more targeted. And as you rightly say, rather than just offering a general support, a general STEM visit, actually really looking at individual locations, whether it's a ward, whether it's a particular school, and actually where you are bidding for contracts which are, you know, local authority driven or locality based, the people who are, you know, procuring that service will also have some degree of understanding of where their issues are. And by demonstrating and reflecting back to them that you also know, I think that's got to be invaluable. And the fact that you've had those conversations, we tend to see a lot of perhaps corporates are not necessarily comfortable or over familiar with doing that. So perhaps it's also just an education piece of that wants and needs and benefits, as you rightly say.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you're tendering for something, and there's two, I don't know, competing companies going for the same piece of work in a geographical area. What a company A says, yeah, we do STEM visits. Yeah, we take on apprentices. Yes, we'll do some good in communities, litter picks or whatever it might be. This is what we always do. And then you've got company who says, actually, I've really invested time up front in understanding the political makeup, the demographics, the area deprivations. I know the local authorities' priorities, and what's more, I've adapted my plans to suit them. So I know in advance which schools I'm going to engage with. I know which charities and volunteer groups we're going to support in line with the local authority and local need. And we know which trusted relationships we're going to build up with community members from X, Y, and Z. That is a much, much more powerful offering than your generic approach of, yes, this is what we've always done and this is what we'll always do. And of course, every single area is in the country is different. Yes, there's commonalities. Yes, there's area deprivation. Yes, there's you know, the cost of living crisis and the housing crisis. You know, you have to have been living under a rock not to know that. But it's how you can best use your finite resource or naught. And it's only by engaging on a micro level, understanding the local community need, that you can ever begin to make
it. I think you're right. Gone were the days where almost the boilerplate response for a contract example or a tender response is good enough. It is about that local understanding. So if there was some kind of advice that you could give or some insight you could give for organisations of how they could learn by that intelligence and starting to perhaps reshape their offer going forward and perhaps start to have either a new competitive edge in this area, because we know social values is so popular and big and rightly so in the UK, or where organisations perhaps by definition have a lot of great value, perhaps a social enterprise or a charity. What learning could almost they take from this process that could help them almost be more sustainable in the future?
One thing we're really pushing for at Sonar Engagement is greater collaboration. So when we map a community and those small charities and faith-based groups, whatever they might be, that are doing good in communities, we always try bridge relationships and make a collaborative approach. And I see that as really an opportunity for charities and companies moving forward to collaborate more in going for funding or sharing the finite resources amongst themselves more. It's a challenge, but I've seen it in practice, and in practice you're getting a far greater return of social investment if organisations are brave enough, I suppose that's probably the wrong word, but put their cards on the table and say, look, this is what we're looking to contribute towards social value. The charitable sector, faith-based group sector or community sector, what is it that you can contribute, and how can we all have one collaborative plan to tackle this particular issue in a problem-solving way, rather than, I call them one-hit, one-day impacts, have, in my experience, very, very little lasting legacy. But if you're able to collaborate in an area and build trusted relationships over a period of time, then your one-day contribution, whatever it might be, has more impact because it's being delivered in a collaborative approach.
I think you're so true there, Paul. And listen to you. Every time I listen to you, I always kind of get that more kind of energy and more inspiration to listen and learn more, perhaps. And I think one of the key things here is, you know, communities are made up of such diverse ranges of people and ethnicities and sexualities and etc. But ultimately, the people. And these are people who either support what you do, whether it's a service, or help you engage, but they're also potentially future employees, supporters, partners for the future. And actually having that intelligence, having that understanding can, say, be so invaluable, but also help you navigate what is and can be such a difficult world where there's so much competing pressures on money, resources, and as you rightly say, go back to exactly that this cost naught. You know, doing it well will give you that kind of impetus and insight for the future. I love that.
What I find really quite refreshing in some areas and areas of good practice is around giving opportunities to people that do come from really long-term needs and really long-term areas of deprivation. What I've seen in terms of good practice is a couple of three organisations coming together that do have work opportunities, but actually changing, sort of breaking the mould of, you know, rather than doing the same, if you do the same as what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. Some of the innovative approaches I've seen is companies going into areas of deprivation, actually into areas of deprivation, right in the heart of communities, either in the schools, charitable shops or community hubs, and actually knocking on doors saying, We've got these jobs available. We'd love for you to come and have an informal chat with us just down the road tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That approach is being really welcomed by communities who sometimes have real challenges in terms of transport, getting out the immediate area, or not really understanding where that community is coming from. And those little shoots of good practice, I would like to see sort of more and more of.
And I think all the work that you're doing, Paul, and that you're facilitating, certainly, is that's happening, you know, and complete respect for you in that respect. So I'm just kind of thinking about wrapping up, because we always try to keep these podcasts short and sweet where possible. I think if we were to reflect on the conversation, that we've almost can see the importance of value intelligence, actually learning and listening and then learning again about what people want and need, thinking about how that can shape your future development, your future community engagement, your future social value offering, and also start to see how this can shape actually your future marketing and communication, because we've got to be a little bit more individualized. We can't be using those generic approaches anymore. And this is about learning from your key stakeholders. So it can be those partners, it can be your clients, it can be internal staff. But without that external understanding, why are we doing this? So I must admit, Paul, it's been fascinating as normal when we have these conversations. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.